vascular systems, right? Two of them. We said that already. And they sometimes have problems, obviously. And they're not working efficiently. So one of the problems is blood pressure, correct? Blood pressure is what? What's the definition? Yeah, the pressure inside the vessel pushing against the side walls. We just talked about that. We got that, right? That's what blood pressure is. Okay, cardiac, it can be controlled by cardiac output. So if you decrease the cardiac output, right, you're going to bring blood pressure down, which is one of the ways we do it. Systematic vascular resistance, okay. If you've got the vessels being really hard from atherosclerosis or stenosis, they're not going to, they're going to get smaller and there's going to be more resistance, or they're going to be less flexible. They're not going to expand as needed, therefore causing the blood pressure to go up. Stimulation of the sympathetic nervous system, releasing hormones that control fluid volume. If you're going to hit that car in front of you and there's epinephrine in your body, what happens? You can actually feel it. Do you feel the tingling in your fingers? It's because all the blood's rushing to your core, right? So your blood pressure increases, right? Because it's rushing in. It's more blood, more volume in, and that's hormonal control. What's very cool about when we medicate for blood pressure, we do it on several different levels. We'll start as simply as a diuretic, okay, to take off the fluid. And then we'll progress. Well, if that's not doing it, we'll add something else. That's why you tend to see your patients on maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 different BP meds, which is not unusual. You'll see that's for blood pressure, that's for blood. Well, they're working on different things. One may be a diuretic, taking off fluids. One may be decreasing workload of the heart. Okay, so they're doing different things. So we talked about the sympathetic nervous system, the epinephrine and norepinephrine response. Angiotensin, vasopressin, also hormones that work into your cardiac activity and your vascular resistance. Aldosterone, ADH, and of course the sodium and water. All factored in. There's a nice little schematic from your text. It's kind of cool. It brings it all together. I'm going to take a quick look at that. And am I going to ask you any of these little details? No. But I may ask you in general, what are some factors involved in blood pressure, like cardiac output, vascular resistance, blood volume, that kind of thing, vessel diameter, okay? I'm not going to get into all these different things. Small details. So as I said last week, most of the diagnoses of hypertension are for primary hypertension, meaning no known cause. Primary, we don't know. Remember, systolic blood pressure is normally 140 higher. That's considered high blood pressure. Diastolic 90 or higher. Many people have a sympathetic nervous system overstimulation, meaning a stress reaction increases blood pressure, causes the hormones to be released, and you have blood pressure goes up. Has anybody experienced that? Have you ever taken your blood pressure? You think you're under stress? It's usually up. Mine is always like up. If ever I'm stressed, every time I go to the doctor, it's up. Because just the idea of someone telling me what to do bothers me, and it goes up. And so they think I have, and I say, no, I'm really not, which is why occasionally I'll ask you guys on the floors, please take my blood pressure. And sometimes if I'm nervous, it'll be up, and other times I'll be fine. Okay. So some people are particularly sensitive to emotional disturbances in their blood pressure. Other people do other things. They get mad. So we all react differently to stress, and our bodies respond differently. Okay. So psychological sympathetic nervous system responses may be a factor for some and not for others. So normally, primary hypertension is initially asymptomatic. That's why they call it the silent killer, right? People then, as it gets worse, tend to get some, may get some headaches, confusion, nocturia, nausea, vomiting, visual disturbances. As the vessels in the brain enlarge and cause pressure against different nerves in the brain that have to do with, say, vision. And nausea and vomiting. Okay. Primary hypertension, certainly, if primary hypertension continues and is left to unmedicated, untreated, cardiovascular, neurogenic, and renal system problems all can occur. Renal system makes all sorts of sense, doesn't it? Because if you have that much more blood to filter, the kidneys are going to be stressed. So obviously, then kidney disease, okay? can be a related underlying cause. So if your kidneys are not working efficiently, that could cause the blood pressure because they're not filtering enough out, the blood out. A coarcation of the aorta, that's a deformity of the aorta. Endocrine disorders, neurological disorders, drug use, yeah, we know that. Right, stimulants certainly were going to cause an increase in heart rate and subsequent increase in blood pressure. Pregnancy, yeah, the body really compensates for being pregnant. It's got what you gain a third more of blood in the first trimester. And pregnancy is really tough on the heart and on the body. It's a lot to do with blood flow. So pregnancy can definitely be a cause for hypertension. Now, hypertensive crisis is fairly interesting. My patient that I started talking about at the beginning of the semester, he died a couple weeks ago, and I believe the cause was a hypertensive crisis. As a complication of ALS, his body could no longer have the control mechanisms to control his blood pressure. As a result of the ALS, he lost that neurological control. So what I was getting, which was really frightening, was blood pressures that I had never seen before. Systolic blood pressures at 320, 330. At one point, I texted the MD and went, how long can a body sustain this kind of blood pressure? He never texted me back. He said, and when I talked to him after, he said, I've never seen it. He said, I wouldn't even tell you that. You know, over like 150 diastolic. I mean, amazing blood pressures. I had to throw out the machine because at 220, the machine says it doesn't want to read it anymore. So I was doing it all manually, and it was really scary. In the last couple of days of his life, we were like pushing enough meds to like control his blood pressure that would have killed any of us. I mean, the doc, I was talking to the doc after he died, and I was saying, you know, God, we were doing so much, and we would have killed some of that sometimes when we were giving those meds. And I said, I know. I said, well, what I was going to do? He was going to die from the hypertensive crisis, or he was going to die from the drugs. And I'm going, yeah, so we were pushing him. And every time he came back for me, which was, I probably went through 5 or 6 of these hypertensive crises with him during the last week of his life. And it was really scary, because he'd be, you know, kind of comatose at that point, really out of it, and you're just pushing these drugs, and the blood pressure just, I mean, you're going, I can't believe that. You're like pushing it, going, it's like in the red line, completely in the red on the little dial, and it hardly got even out of the red for the diastolic. And I'm like, it was amazing. That was the most frank hypertensive crisis I've ever seen. They're normally not that extreme. This was a man with severe complications at the very end of his life. Normally, they're not that bad. Normally, we can bring down the blood pressure, and they're fine within an hour. But you're not talking about blood pressures over 300 systolic. You're talking about 200, you know, maybe 220, 250, not well over 300. It's not that bad. So that was real fascinating. And then the man did die of a hypertensive crisis. I believe that's what happened. What happened was we were treating this amazing blood pressure, and I'm just going, how long can we go on like this? But he was responding, and his heart was strong, which was amazing. So he, at that point, it was on a Tuesday, he had decided that this was enough, that he wanted to stop life support. So we said, okay, he had a few more things he needed to do, and I was going to disconnect life support the following Monday. Okay? We worked through Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday, I wasn't with him. I was with you guys. And I checked in with the nurses. I changed the shift, which was 7. And they said, the day nurse said, I think he's going into another crisis, but, you know, we're not treating us okay. So at that point, we had said, okay, we'll just monitor. We won't take any extreme measures. You know, he had made the decision to die. We didn't want to bother him. So what happened is that evening his wife and children came in. They were visiting. It was about 9 o'clock, so we had a 2-hour window there, right, where she hadn't checked his vitals from 7 to 9. They were fine at 7, but the nurse leaving said, I have a sense something's going to happen. The night nurse did not check his vitals, which was appropriate. As we said, we're not going to bother him. We want him to have this time with his family. We want him to do whatever he wants. So we had the time with his family, visited for a couple hours, they walked out and he died. So what do you think physiologic was that exact cause of death? What's your guess? I can tell you what ours are.
His heart was like...
No, the heart was good. That's a good guess. And if he had been someone with any cardiac problems, that definitely would have been, he would have died way before. So not cardiac. What do you think?
Right.
What do you think? Extreme blood pressure. What's going to happen? What's the result? Think about the vascular tube. It's a vascular lecture. It's going to what? Yeah. Exactly. It's going to bleed out. You think he had a brain bleed and die real fast. With that kind of blood pressure, it wouldn't take very long, right? And he did. The nurse said it was. Just said that. All the bells and everything started going off. And she walked in and he was dead. And it was dead. From the time it took her to walk across the room. So interesting, huh? Yeah, it was a brain bleed. His, of course, cause of death is complications of ALS. Because we're not going to do an autopsy. We're not sure. But given what was going on, that makes a lot of sense. And it was great. It was a really nice death. He chose it. So that was an extreme hypertensive crisis. You're not going to see that. Because in the hospitals, we're going to control it, or someone's going to get in palliative care. You're not going to really be so involved as to realize the exact cause of death. Generally, we can treat within one hour. You're not going to have that kind of complication. Normally, under general conditions, people are going to respond to the meds we give them. We have lots available to bring down hypertension. Headache, confusion, all this stuff, obviously, right? You're going to have all these problems with hypertension in a crisis. Lymphadenopathy, enlarged lymph nodes. Okay? This can be localized or generalized. Okay? Lymph nodes can also become inflamed. Okay? You can have inflammation of the lymph vessels. This is when you get red streaks up the arm. Have you ever heard about a bad infection where people end up with red streaks? That's when the lymph starts becoming involved, right? Lymphadenopathy, enlarged liver lymph nodes. Now, we normally see this isolated, right? A localized area when there's an infection. But there is a time when it's generalized, when the whole lymph system can become inflamed. And then there's lymphedema. Anybody know what lymphedema is? Any idea? Swelling. It's swelling caused by lymph. All right. Rather than a seeping of tissue from the blood circulatory system. Why women who have had mastectomies? Why do we not take blood pressures on their affected arm? Any ideas? You know that, right? You learned that? I hope. You learned it from me, some of you. One of you. I'm hoping you learned that skills, but you don't, or you've seen it in the hospital. Women that have mastectomies, you don't take blood pressure on the arm that has been affected by cancer. Any idea why? These are women that have gone through treatment and survived. Survivors. They've had treatment for that cancer, and the breast tissue, if you remember, goes all the way under the arm where there is a tremendous number of lymph nodes. Okay? So rarely does a woman escape breast cancer treatment without some disruption of the lymph system. And the lymph system are the vessels that feed that same arm. Okay? So if we do anything to disrupt that flow, the side effect may be lymphedema. Which is swelling of the lymph. Because often, from cancer treatments, say radiation or surgery, deficient number of lymph nodes, deficiency in the lymph flow to the arm, so if there's any kind of an infection, anything where you need white blood cells, they're going to be able to get down there, but not be able to get back because of the diminished flow. Right? So what you get is pooling, stasis of lymph, venous, lymph stasis, and you get swollen, you get lymphedema. Yeah?
So what do you do with lymphedema?
What's the treatment for lymphedema?
No, what do you do with women with double mastectomies?
Legs. You can take it on the calf. I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Yeah, double mastectomies keep the blood pressure on the calf. Or on the calf, depending how large the woman is. Either works just fine. You don't want to do anything to disrupt that arm. Because it's really amazing. I've seen just as small as a rose thorn, cause his arm to just balloon up.
Because it can't get it, you can't get it done. And that's a real problem, a real concern for infection, okay? And then really, there's massage, there's very little treatment for it. So these ladies often go around with large extremities. That's a secondary lymphedema. Primary is genetic. Occasionally people will be born with a deficient lymph system in one or more limbs. And that's very interesting to see too. Same presentation, lymphedema. It's caused by a genetic malformation in the lymph circulatory system. There's a deficiency. They simply don't have enough lymph. When it goes down, it doesn't go down. We talked about aneurysms. You remember what aneurysms are? Right? That's obviously a problem with the vessel. Okay. Hypertension is a major contributing cause to aneurysms. I think we talked about that. Dissection is a little different than an aneurysm. An aneurysm is when you're causing the outermost part of the vessel to balloon out. Now, a dissection is when it's a more interlayer, so you kind of get this kind of thing going on within the vessel wall. So it's not like this, it's more like this. All right, it's within the layers of the vessel wall. It's a dissection. Okay? And it allows blood to invade the layers of the vessel wall rather than balloon it out. A little different, it's another kind of aneurysm. There are thoracic aneurysms, okay? Maybe an asymptomatic. Again, we talked about this when we talked about the cardiac problems. Abdominal aneurysms, we talked about that, remember? Aortic abdominal aneurysms. We talked about it when it had to do with atherosclerosis. Hypertension certainly is a factor. So we're going to bring that concept forward again and bring in the whole hypertension part. Right? Could certainly be a problem. Patient presents with a mass, pain in the abdominal region or back. That's what you're going to see upon presentation. And then we talked about thrombi that can be mobilized. You guys did a great exercise on that. And thrombi can rupture, they can cause hemorrhage, they can cause hypovolemic shock. Why would they cause hypovolemic shock? Hypovolemic. If there's a rupture, right, you're going to bleed out, loss of blood, as if it was a trauma or anything else. Okay, hypovolemic shock that can quickly lead to death. That can be an aneurysm, that can be an emboli that ruptures, that can be an intestinal bleed, anything. Okay, but it can happen simply through the vascular system and bleed out. Okay? There are popliteal and femoral aneurysms. So we've talked a lot about the aortic aneurysms. We talked about brain aneurysms. They can also be popliteal and femoral aneurysms, same kind of thing. Yeah, there's some cool pictures in the book. You might want to look at it. See it? Aortic dissection. You know what a dissection is now. It can happen in the aorta. It's kind of scary. It's a tear. Okay. It can affect the descending, ascending, or the split in the vessel wall. Okay. Manifestations are exactly what you would think. Excruciating pain, syncope, you're going to get dizzy, right? Dyspnea, short of breath, because you're going to want to compensate for the lack of oxygen because of the blood. Dyspnea, weakness, absence of peripheral pulses, sure. So just think about the pathos, everything you would expect to see, right? With the problem and then the compensatory mechanisms of the body. It's kind of what I want you to start putting together. If there's a problem, what does the body do in response? Right? Not only what is the pathophys of the problem, but then what is the response? What are you going to see? How are they going to present? It's going to lead us to that diagnosis. Dissections, you can have complications of carotid arteries, infarctions all over the body. Okay? Dissections, and there's another clue. Peripheral vascular disease. What is that? Narrowing of peripheral arteries. And why would peripheral arteries narrow? What do you think? You know this because we talked about these problems. How are you going to get narrowing of the arteries? We talked about it with the cardiac lecture. Yeah, how about atherosclerosis? Yeah. How about nicotine too? Diabetes? All lead to either constriction of the arteries or narrowing, such as with atherosclerosis. The result often is peripheral vascular disease. Periphery, right?
External.
Vascular disease. That's why so many diabetics lose their extremities. The impaired blood supply to the peripheral tissues. Manifestations, we're going to have cramping, aching, right, all this from the anaerobic metabolism, right, of the cells. There's rest during inactivity, there's increased risk, increased pain with elevation of the leg. Pain decreases when the legs are down. That makes sense because the blood can go there. When you raise the legs, you don't have gravity working for you, so it's more painful. So if they're not getting any arterial blood, remember the skin is thin, shiny, hairless, there's some discolored areas, toenails can be thickened, okay, areas can break down, there can be some edema. That's where it gets a little confusing. Now eventually, if it's so extreme that there's no blood getting to a finger, a toe, ganglion sets in, right? That can be bad. You can also have ruptures of abdominal aortic aneurysms, you can have infection, you have sepsis, you can have a lot of complications from peripheral vascular disease. Amputations are not at all unusual. And you've seen, some of you have seen some of that, right? People with amputations from diabetics or trauma. But it's peripheral vascular disease caused by the diabetes that eventually led to the amputation. Raynaud's disease, this is very interesting. This is vasospasms in the small arteries or arterioles. We don't know what causes it, and it looks like this. So the tips of these fingers, the arterioles are spasming, therefore not allowing the blood to get there, right? It's not blue yet, it's just colorless. Okay? Eventually they turn blue, hopefully the spasm will stop, and the blood will return. Interesting. It's another vascular complication that you may run across. Raynaud's phenomenon, Raynaud's disease. We talked about thrombi and embolism. We know that it's an emergency condition. We talked about venous thrombi in the wall of a vein. Cause inflammation of the vein, some degree of venous blood flow obstruction, so they could be arterial or venous. Some good examples of venous thrombi. The popliteal vein is common. It seems to be more common, definitely, the venous in extremities. Common veins. You have it in the greater saphenous, it's right there. Those are common places for a venous clot. There's also chronic problems with venous insufficiency. When there's a long-term time when blood is not getting back up, okay, returning to the heart. These are the Walmart ladies I talked about last time. A venous stasis occurs. Right? Blood's pooling. Right? Impaired arterial circulation. Yeah, because it can't get back up into arterial circulation. Here's an example of someone with chronic venous insufficiency. This is an ankle. You have some swelling, definitely redness. This is a stasis ulcer. Nothing can get there to cure this. Can't get any white blood cells there. Just kind of stuck. How about varicose veins? Anybody know about this? Yeah? Gabby does? Anybody else? Yeah? Tell us. Does your mom have them?
Yeah, my entire
family. Okay, tell us about them.
Like what they look like?
Yeah, what they look like.
Well, they look like kind of like masks. Sometimes they're like blue, sometimes they're green. Like they're different colors.
Are they big and stick out?
Yeah, they're really big and stick out. And then sometimes some of them are thin, but like in different places they'll be really big. They'll just be in one area.
Yeah.
And then they'll go a little in another area.
Yeah, they can be pretty gross. Is that a problem? Be careful, they're hereditary. Serious.
No.
Start now with your compression stockings, please. Because they certainly could be hereditary. The propensity for having them, you probably got them when you became pregnant, right? Yeah, ask her about that. Pregnancy often is a precursor. Everybody's fine until they get pregnant, they have the extra blood flow, the hypertension, and they get varicose veins. Very common story for women. But men have varicose veins too. Nurses certainly have a lot of vascular problems, right? So watch out for the veins in your legs. You're certainly at risk in our population. So Gabby, what's your story? Have your kids done a similar presentation?
No, I've just seen them all around before.
Yeah.
I've seen them like on before the bus and at the mall.
Yeah, they like, they're almost like the veins on the outside, right? Mm-hmm. Like the vein is hanging around on the outside. Generally, they're irregular, torturous veins with incompetent valves. So they're like flabby veins, and the blood's like stuck in them, and they stick out. Not very attractive. Okay? So I have a lovely little adventure for you here. Oh, you don't want to sit there. Here you go. So you can earn a couple more points. Would you like that? This is, okay. Tell me if these problems are vascular. Think about it. We talked a little bit about this last time. Talk a little more today. And now give it some thought. Is this a vascular problem or an arterial problem? And you're going to have some slides of which one is that.